Thank you. My topic is fluoridation in rural and urban settings in the United States, and I would like to state that I do not have any disclosures to present. I'd like to acknowledge the study team, Dr. Michael Hendricks, Clifton Strange, Jay Mason, Juan Lowe, Matthew Armistead, Jameson Conley, Andrea McGinley, Evan Fedorko, Matthew Gurka, and me. And so as an introduction to the effects of fluoride on oral health, I'd like to begin by defining what oral dental caries is as a bacterial infection of teeth. When you have a vulnerable tooth that's exposed to a bacterial biofilm over time, you'll see that the pH of the tooth will drop, and if it drops below 5.5, then the tooth begins to demineralize and cavitates. We treat dental caries whenever there is, depending upon certain factors, either the presence or absence of the depth of the cavitation, and if it's occurring rapidly or slowly. So we can have it arrested in early stages, and there are times when monitoring that situation is appropriate. Dental caries is the number one childhood disease in the United States, 5 to 8 times more common than asthma. And untreated caries affects about 20% of the children who are aged 2 to 5. And we found that 25% of the children who have at least one permanent tooth and are aged 5 to 17 have 80% of all the caries burden. So the burden is very heavy in a very small amount of the population. We have seen some trends in caries that are somewhat discouraging with the ages of the 2 to 5 year olds. In 1988 to 94, we saw a 24% caries rate, and it's increased to 28%, but a little bit more success with the 6 to 11 year olds, whose rate has gone from 25% to 22%. So we found that fluoride in very low levels will incorporate into the tooth structure itself, into the material called hydroxyapatite, and it will strengthen the tooth during development. After development, it's an adjunct in the remineralization process, so it helps to restore some dynamic equilibrium when these teeth are challenged with acid. Historically, we found that in the 1900s, the dentists noticed that a brown stain, which was called fluorosis, was responsible for areas where there was a lack of caries. And then in 1925, there was a statistical relationship that was identified between the stain and the lack of caries. In 1945, Trendley Dean was able to do a study in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where fluoride was added to the community water in approximately 1 milligram per liter. And in 1951, the Public Health Service adopted a policy of adding fluoride in the amount of 0.7 to 1.2 parts per million, depending upon the air temperature, to reduce the prevalence of caries. And they kept in mind the fact that there was the brown stain, and so they wanted to keep that level at about 10 to 12%. So we have a lot of factors that go into caries development: the complexity of the person themselves, the bacteria, the environment, and policies such as water fluoridation. We found that some studies have indicated that fluoride in a 29% will cause a 29% drop in caries, and other studies have indicated it is even more effective, affecting almost 50%. Decrease in caries. The cost of fluoride is pretty reasonable, but it does vary from communities. It's about 40 cents per person in communities of about 20,000 people or more, and it's more expensive at $2.70 per person per year in communities serving 5,000 or fewer. But we've found that for every dollar that's spent, approximately $38 is saved in treatment costs. So the Surgeon General has agreed that this is a very cost-effective method and safe and equitable means by which caries can be eliminated or reduced in a community. So the community water fluoridation has been listed by the Health and Human Services as the 13th goal in the 2020 objective for healthy persons. And the target in that goal is 79.6% of community water systems. So we still have a lot of questions about community water fluoridation. What are the effects of the laws and policies to start the community water fluoridations? What effect do we see on adult populations? What changes have occurred because of bottled water or filtered water? And does the community water fluoridation actually reduce SES, racial, ethnic, and geographic disparities in caries? In this particular study, we looked at the possibility that rural populations are more likely than urban populations to have inadequate fluoridation. And the inadequate fluoridation is statistically associated with poorer dental outcomes among rural and urban and adult populations. So we did a cross-sectional retrospective analysis grouping on rural-urban, and we used U.S. Department of Agriculture definitions of rural-urban, which were 12 urban influence codes. They are based on economic research. So codes 1 and 2 are metropolitan areas, and codes 3 to 12 are non-metropolitan areas. Codes 1 and 2, again, are metro, 558 people per square mile for code 1 and 132 per square mile for code 2. There is also a micro definition, codes 3, 5, and 8, and they are approximately 54 people per square mile, and code 8 was 27 people per square mile. And then the rural areas were codes 4, 6, 7, 9, 10, 11, and 12, depending upon if they were adjacent to a metro area or adjacent to a small metro area or adjacent to a micro area. The data source for this study was from the Centers for Disease Control's My Water Fluoride database, and it had the number of people with adequate water fluoridation based on 0.7 parts per million divided by the total county population. And for the adults, we determined our outcome variable to be tooth floss, and that data source was the 2006 Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System, and we had close to 250,000 records. This was a telephone-based health questionnaire that was used. And on that questionnaire was the question, how many of your permanent teeth have been removed because of tooth decay or gum disease? And they were not to include teeth lost from injury or orthodontics. A logistic regression model for the adults was performed, and it was adjusted for age, sex, race, ethnicity, smoking, drinking, education, household income, health insurance, dental care utilization within the previous 2 years, diabetes, and we removed from the model, from the final model, marriage and weight. Also, there were county-level covariates that were in the model. It was the percent of the population below the poverty level, and the number of dentists per 1,000 people. For children, the data source was the 2007 National Survey of Children's Health, and it included almost 90,000 surveys. And their question was, to the best of your knowledge, did your child have decayed teeth or cavities within the past 6 months? And they were also asked the overall condition of their child's teeth. This logistic regression was adjusted for age, sex, race, ethnicity, and had family covariates of if there was a smoker in the house, household education, insurance, and household income, as well as family structure, language spoken in the house, and the number of dental visits in the last year. The county covariates were the same, the percent population between of poverty level and the number of dentists per 1,000 population. And we used SAS to do the statistical analysis and a chi-square analysis of the difference in rural-urban in comparing the metropolitan and the non-metropolitan areas, the metropolitan, the micropolitan, and the non-core rural areas, and then differences along all 12 of the urban influence codes. And then separate logistic regressions were done for the adults and for the children. And our results were that rural populations were statistically more likely to have inadequate water fluoridation. We found the metropolitan counties had approximately 72.6% water fluoridation, and non-metropolitan counties had 63.3%. The metropolitan areas had 72.6%, the micropolitan 67.7%, and the non-core rural areas 61.2%, and they were all three statistically different from each other. We also saw a trend that suggested that along the urban influence codes there was less fluoride available. And our post-hoc test indicated 5 clusters that were similar to each other but were different from the other codes. And these were codes 10 to 12 where there was less than 60% of the population with adequate water fluoridation. Our adult tooth loss outcome in the urban areas with greater percentages of population with adequate fluoride, there were lower risk of adult tooth loss, but in our non-metropolitan areas with greater percentages of population with adequate fluoride, we did not see a relationship with lower risk of tooth loss. And our childhood dental outcome with greater percentages of population exposed to adequate fluoride, there was no significant association with a reported decrease in childhood caries or reported overall improved condition of the teeth. We anticipated the water fluoridation in urban areas to be higher than in the non-core areas, and that was upheld. But we weren't expecting the results for the caries outcome or the tooth loss outcome. So we're suggesting that possibly the cost of fluoridation in micro non-core areas was responsible for possibly the cost per person in non-core areas was responsible for the difference in the amount of fluoridation. And in urban areas with greater percentages of populations with adequate fluoridation, we found that there was a lower risk of tooth loss. Okay, so I'm sorry, I'm going the wrong direction. We expected that there should be a need for more water fluoridation in rural areas, and the possibility that bottled and filtered water are responsible for some of the results that we saw with tooth loss and with caries. Thank you very much.